Hello, hello. Now that the transfer window is kicked off, we are back with another episode of FPL 360.
Glad to be back. We took a break. It's been kind of slow, but things have finally started to pick up. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about confirmed transfers so far. But before we dive into that, it's probably fair that we apologize for our absence and go over what we're going to be providing this summer. Chuck, I don't know how we want to commit to stuff, because in recent history, when we've committed to things, we've had a couple big breaks.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the big thing is, at this point, we're not going to commit to a schedule, but we are going to bring you something, because basically, during the end of the season, work commitments kind of made the podcast something that we were not able to do consistently.
Yeah, the content that we will be providing, we're going to do three specific episodes looking at each of the newly promoted clubs. We'll also be dedicating a few episodes to go over FPL and Fantrax with Togo scoring ranks. And then we'll be sprinkling in some transfer episodes as needed.
And speaking of transfer episodes, that's mainly what this one's going to be.
Yeah, so let's get down to business. I guess the way we kind of looked at it, instead of going through every single transfer, since not all the players will be really FPL relevant, we kind of just made a list of the guys we like from each club, who they've signed so far that we think could be worth something in fantasy. And I guess we'll start it off with Aston Villa with their most recent signing. They acquired Matt Target from Southampton for £11 million. The fee could potentially rise to 17 with add-ons. I guess at face value, do you think that's a fair price for him, or do you think they overpaid?
I mean, they definitely overpaid, but when you look at it, you kind of have to, because of the fact that he is a young guy who can be a building block if they're able to stay up, and he's semi-Premier League proven. Is that what we're going at this point?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, last season he was pretty good filling in with Southampton when they had the injuries at fullback. Him and Jan Valery kind of came onto the scene. From what I've looked at at his numbers, I mean, there's definitely signs that he could be of use for Aston Villa. And I think, you know, for 4.5 in FPL, in terms of a differential, because he is an attacking fullback, you know, that's not a terrible price to pay, since I think the 4.5 pool is kind of diluted this season.
Oh, definitely. Like, I had him in my FPL team at the end of the season last year because I was hoping, like, oh, he's going to get a shot. He's going to get a shot. But unfortunately, Jan Valery kind of, once Tari got hurt, relegated him into a bench role and now kicked him out the door.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing to consider is, obviously, he was playing as a wing back for Southampton, and it seems like he'll be playing more as a traditional fullback for Villa. His crossing numbers were actually pretty good. He was pretty consistent in terms of what he provided on a match-to-match basis. And in terms of, like, completion percentage, he was, like, around 30%, which is extremely impressive considering he did attempt 77 crosses. So there's definitely potential. I think in one of the mocks we did, I took him, I think, after maybe in the 13th or 14th round. I do think he's worth a flyer there. But I guess overall, I mean, do you think, since Villa are coming in having had the second worst defensive record in the championship at home, do you think the potential for them to concede a lot really hinder anyone who would look at them in OFPL?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a concern. I'm putting him as kind of a wait and see. I'm putting most of Villa as a wait and see. just because you genuinely don't know what you're going to see with that team. Like, realistically, out of the promoted teams, the most Premier League ready defense is probably Sheffield, and then the most Premier League ready offense is Norwich. So Villa's got some work to do.
Yeah, Villa also signed Jota, so now there's two Jotas in the Premier League. He's an attacking midfielder who played for Birmingham City last season. He provided 3 goals and 9 assists. I don't know too much about him, and I haven't dug into the highlights and the statistics so far. I've seen a little bit of a buzz about him. I mean, do you think he's someone to look at in OFPL as a flyer? I personally don't.
I realistically think that every Villa signing is a wait and see.
Yeah, what about in draft leagues?
In draft leagues, I'm probably only looking at a guy that we will mention later, and Taggart.
Yeah, I mean, I think Taggart is the guy here. They also signed Wesley from Club Brugge in Belgium. He's a center forward. He had 10 goals and 9 assists in league play last season. Excuse me. Another guy I don't know too much about. He's definitely going to have a chance at playing a decent amount.
Yeah, I mean, considering that Scott Hogan will never play a game for Aston Villa again and was on loan to Sheffield United at the end of last season, it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing with him. And that Tammy Abraham, who scored 29 for Villa in the championship?
Pukki scored 29 for Norwich. Abraham, I believe, had 23 last season.
Darn it. I wanted to say 24 at first. Close enough. But they were... It seemed like they didn't particularly want to complete a deal to get him from Chelsea, so they send him back, and Wesley should walk right in and be the starting center forward.
Yeah, speaking of Chelsea, there's no real FPL value, in my opinion, but do you understand why they're paying so much for Kovacic? I mean, I know he's good and he's young, but I just think that it's insane that that's the guy that they're buying right now.
It seems like that's the only person they can buy right now. Because I don't know exactly when the ban is supposed to be handed down now. Because, like, I know they're in the appeal process, and there's, like, a bunch of wonky stuff with that. But I saw something where it was, like, since they already have the registration papers for Kovacic, that they can buy him. And theoretically, if they wanted to, they could buy Higuain, but again, why would they ever do that? It seems like it's more of a panic buy just because they know Ruben Loftus-Cheek won't be healthy.
Yeah, I just think that this probably has something to do with the inner workings of how he was already there on loan, so I'm guessing there was already an open channel of communication. But, I mean, you have Ross Barkley to play in midfield. Obviously, he plays further up the field, and he's not really of a defensive mindset. But you have such a big loan army. I just think this is kind of,
yeah, like, that, asinine. I mean, that's why I don't get it. Like, you could toss that spot to so many players. I mean, like, depending on the formation you're playing, he's not even going to see the field because you can still only play either one of Jorginho and N'Golo Kante if you're going to play a two-man pivot, and you're probably going to play Ross Barkley next to them. You're going to have Mason Mount coming back from loan. You're going to have Ethan and Amunpu healthy and ready to play. Like, I just don't get it, and especially for $40 million.
Yeah, but that's enough on Chelsea. Because I've grown tired of episodes where we set aside 5 to 10 minutes to just say how confusing they are. So let's go to Brighton. They signed Leandro Tosard, a winger from Genk. I'm interested to see what he does. He's coming off a season where he scored 14 goals and had 7 assists.
And is captain this... the side.
And captain the side. Now, obviously, Brighton's move for Jahan Bosch last season did not pan out. Is he coming in, I guess, with better pedigree or...
Well,
what so he's done, is it
he's not coming from the Dutch league, so that already means that it's a slightly better buy.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think he's going to have a chance to walk? Is he going to walk into the team and pretty much have Knockhart or Sully March be on the bench, or is he going to be?
I don't think anyone that's not named Pascal Gross, Shane Duffy, or Lewis Dunk or Matt Ryan are really walking straight into this Brighton team next year, because Graham Potter will likely change the formation to a pretty strict 4-2-3-1, which means that both the wing spots are probably up for competition. I think that his biggest competition is going to be Anthony Knockhart, who has shown in his Premier League career to be quite inconsistent, even though he did end up having a pretty good year for draft owners last year. But he's still got something to prove.
Yeah, I mean, Trossard has also, I mean, you got to think about Izquierdo, and Lacadia was playing out on the wing towards the end of last season.
I'm assuming Lacadia is treated as a 9 this season.
Yeah, him and Andoni probably starting the takeover process from Glenn Murray, since he's not getting any younger.
But we said that last year.
Yeah, he just continues to score goals. It's pretty remarkable. But I mean, I see that being as a rotation up front, and you know, the midfield is interesting. I'm not going to touch him in FPL at 6 million. But I would be willing to pick him later on in draft, depending upon how far he drops.
After the twelfth round, if I have 4 midfielders that I'm decently confident in, I'm throwing a dart.
Well, speaking of midfielders, this one is not over the line yet, but Eozy Perez was one of the players reclassified from forward to midfield for Newcastle. Now it looks like he's on his way to Leicester City for 30 million. This is extremely interesting because I'm guessing he's going to be playing as a forward if he goes to Leicester. How hot would you be on him at 6.5 million in FPL?
It's going to be actually really interesting to look at how this Leicester squad does business, because if they're able to get this over the line and keep Tielemans, he's going to have massive value. The big thing is, though, with this reportedly being at about 30 million, I'm wondering if this is their admittance that, crap, we're not keeping him and we need to switch either to a 4-4-2 or a 4-4-1-1 where he's playing just behind Vardy.
Yeah, I think him coming in would be a 4-4-1-1, kind of reverting back to when they had all that success and won the title with Shinji Okazaki playing off of Vardy underneath. And I mean, Madison's capable of kind of playing wherever. I mean,
both Madison, Barnes, Damari Gray, they can play wherever on the wings, behind the striker, up top. I prefer them, obviously, in more attacking roles, but this move realistically would add to their appeal because of the fact that Kelechi Iheanacho can't hit the back of a paper bag, and Perez is coming off of his best Premier League season ever.
I don't know how I feel about that price, though, in terms of a transfer fee.
It's far too high, but Newcastle wants to extort to line Mike Ashley's pockets.
Yeah, I mean, I would think 15, maybe 20, but I think 30 is definitely too high.
And that's always the thing, too, with reported transfer fees. Like, we don't know how much of that is necessarily a 30 up front.
Yeah.
Or 18 plus add-ons.
Yeah. The other player Leicester have signed this summer is James Justin. He's a right back from Luton Town.
And that's all you really need to know about him.
Yeah, the only he would only be relevant if Perea gets poached, which I don't think is going to happen. Just because if he has another season like he did this past season, he's going to go for so much more next summer. So, yeah, Justin is kind of just one for the future. Moving right along, we have my beloved Manchester United. They have Daniel James over the line and Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I guess we'll start with Wan-Bissaka just because he's an extremely well-known entity after last season. What is your take on, I mean, his value in FPL at 5.5 million?
I like the move right now. I'll love the move if United gets a center back.
Yeah, they're reportedly tussling with Leicester over Harry Maguire. The last fee I saw floated was 70 million. Just
pay 35 for a competent center back literally anywhere else. It's not worth it. I get it that you want to pay to go back to having English players, but like, come on.
Yeah, it's just the England premium fee that's kind of the new buzz now. I mean, you even saw it trickle down to Matt Target. So it's obviously going to be also at the top end. I mean, I think he's going to be very good for Manchester United. I need to take a bigger look at his attacking numbers in terms of the underlying metrics from last season on Crystal Palace.
I mean, they're not great. I mean, I get the, oh, he was a winger and moved back to being a right back. Well, like, there's a reason he did that.
Yeah, the thing I'm more interested in is looking at his crossing numbers.
Yeah, it's not great. They're like if he was an above average crosser of the ball, he would have gotten far more assists on Palace because it's not like he didn't have attackers to get the ball to. But also, it's not like with Luke Shaw on the other side, he needs to be. United didn't really buy him for him bombing forward. They bought him because they need to keep some goddamn clean sheets.
Yeah, last season, it's pretty remarkable when you look at the table and see that Manchester United conceded one less goal than West Ham.
Oh, it was that bad?
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that bad until I looked up some numbers on Fabian Balbuena today, and I came across that West Ham conceded 55 and United conceded 54.
Yeah, that's not company anyone wants to be in.
Yeah, not in the least bit. The other guy we have is Daniel James. As I like to say, Danny Wheels. He's known for his pace. He's coming in. I don't know what's going to happen with him because there's this other guy who's pretty good named Anthony Martial.
And this other guy that's paid really well named Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah. What do we make of James?
I mean, essentially, I can't claim to know what to make of this. But am I picking him because of the fact that he may end up starting games for United? Yes.
So how should he be drafted? Because I've seen people kind of polarized on him. I've seen him go too early in some mocks. I've seen him fall a decent amount. Like, what's the value on Manchester United's rotating wingers this season? I guess that's a better encompassing question.
So in one of the mock drafts that both of us were in, I took him in the 14th round. And I think after the 12th is when you can think about taking him, because those are the players where if they hit, they'll help you win your league. But if they don't, they're the first ones you're dropping.
Yeah, I think that's safe. I mean, I don't think he should go before the 10th round. Maybe, I don't know, it's interesting. It's very interesting to look at that team because, like, I think in that same mock draft, I went after Martial rather early. I mean, I'm personally...
But Martial has a much better chance of playing legitimate games as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, would you consider drafting, if you draft Martial, drafting James? Like, is that? I mean, I know we don't really like to get into handcuffs. But, I mean, do you think that there's a possibility Daniel James is the go-to guy on the left wing come, you know, two-thirds of the season in?
Probably not. He'll more likely be someone that you're holding like how we held Jared and Shaqiri last year, where it's festive period, run-in time, squad rotation, and he starts some games.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that. Hopefully he'll pan out. Definitely one for the future. And if you're playing a keeper league, he's someone I would consider reaching a little bit on. Moving on to Norwich City, the signing that I want to talk about is Patrick Roberts on loan. I don't know what to think of this because I think he's a very talented player, but he's coming into a Norwich team where he's probably going to have to be the third best attacking option.
And he's also...
He's very young. He hasn't played in the Premier League yet. I think they're going to put a lot on him. I mean, I do think he can potentially handle it, but I don't really know where to consider him for draft Premier League leagues.
Well, that's why, because you're not drafting him.
So you think you wouldn't take him in like the 16th round?
I'm one of the people who actually, you know, likes to take a keeper at some point. So I usually reserve the 16th round for what keepers left that I may be able to take.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Roberts is, I mean, I'm excited to watch him play for Norwich, but in terms of fantasy, he's just an afterthought for now.
If he gets off to a hot start, or even literally starts the first game, I may consider it, but not right now.
Yeah, I think it's too much of an unknown for me to be willing to take a risk on him. And then, I mean, you look at him in FPL, and what is his price? He's at 5.5. Yeah, that's too much. I mean, if he was at 5 million.
Yeah, the FPL prices have been weird, but we'll talk about that a little more later.
Yeah. The next team we were going to talk about is Southampton. So the most recent signing is Che Adams, striker coming in from Birmingham City. He had 22 goals and 48 appearances last season in the Championship. This is very, very interesting.
Love this signing.
Yeah, it spells the end to my boy Charlie Austin's time there. It seems like he's going to be headed out the door potentially to Sheffield, which would be an interesting move. But Che Adams, is this the kind of guy who has the, I guess, comes in with a reputation where you would be willing to overpay a little bit in a draft for him?
I still would prefer drafting him in, like, the 11th round. But He's more, because I don't think he's at FPL yet. But
Yeah,
if he's
they
priced
just added him.
around, what's his price? Because I'd say five. If he's 5 million, I'm going for him.
No, he's 6 million.
Why?
So he's priced with Ings and Austin both at 6 million.
Why?
I couldn't tell
So
you.
I'm at 6 million, I'm still sticking with Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
If he was a little cheaper, I would be willing to downgrade because I do believe that this is a good move for him. Playing with Danny Ings, the fact that he not only can find the back of the net, but he can thread a ball to someone else to finish it. It's going to be some very interesting times for Southampton.
Yeah, and I mean, if they continue like I'm expecting they did under Hasenhüttl,
They
picking
should
up
be a
momentum,
mid-table team.
yeah, they should be back where the amount of talent they have, where they're where it can their season result can actually reflect the talent they have. I mean, I don't know what this means for. I mean, I still like Redmond a lot. I kind of hoped that they wouldn't sign a striker and we'd see him playing up front with
So
Ings.
I'm wondering if this means that Redmond's actually going to be in the hole behind both strikers.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about Redmond is
He can
he can
play
play, yeah,
anywhere.
he can play anywhere. And I mean, looking back at the formations, because they kind of went through a couple at the end of the season. The one that, I mean, obviously was most beneficial for Redmond in fantasy was when they were rolling with the 3-4-2-1 and he was playing as one of the two underneath Ings. But I would guess it's going to be more like a 3-5-2 as long as Adams, doesn't
Or a three
just.
four, more like a 3-4-1-2.
Yeah, something like that. So I think he's fine. I do like Adams. Yeah, if he was at 5.5, he would 100% be in my team, but six, like you
It's
said,
just a
with
little too
Calvert,
expensive.
yeah, with Calvert-Lewin, and you will also mention. I mean, this is kind of something we expected, but Danny Ings has re-upped and joined Southampton on a permanent. I just wanted to mention that because Ings is somebody who I've struggled placing for my FPL or draft. With Tauge scoring. Like, where do you currently have him in your rankings?
In my forward ranks, it would have helped if I actually had my forward ranks up at the beginning of this, but I at least had the paper ones.
I mean, I was back and forth on putting him between.
Actually,
Because
I
he
put him
wasn't he,
17th.
yeah, I had him in. I think I had him at 23 at first.
The thing is, the guy that he was just above is now gonna drop a decent bit, and that's Marko Arnautović.
Yeah, we gotta update these, update my rankings after some of these moves. I guess we can just segue to West Ham now. Yeah, Arnie has handed in. He's done his annual, which is
Transfer
now like,
requests.
yeah, now it's, the.
6 monthly.
Yeah, so this comes down to do they want to pay him again or will they let him go? I was thinking they would pay him because teams are going to see how bad he wants to leave and they're just going to try and lowball West Ham.
Yeah, it's, but then there's also the fact that they may just decide that they kind of have to pay him because West Ham United, who used to have a million strikers on the books, now has Arnautović, a one-away Chicharito, and a 19-year-old.
Yeah. And then they have Jordan Hugo.
They tried to sell in Boro already, and they said no. we don't want him back.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
Jordan Hugo is not on those books.
Yeah. Yeah, this is weird. I had Arnie around. I think I had Arnie at... Yeah, I had Arnie, I think, at 16. I was a bit higher on him. But this is very weird because if you look at, like, West Ham's squad composition right now, I mean, they just have an army of wingers.
You know, they miss your... They're good. They may end up missing your favorite guy to hype up.
Yeah, Andy Carroll. Oh, Andy Carroll.
I mean, technically, they could still re-sign him.
I mean, I think... Like, let's say they... Let's say, I mean, there's also a scenario where they don't pay Arnie, they don't sell him, and he just sits out.
I mean, I would rather they just let him go, because the West Ham attack was actually better last season without Arnautovic than with it, because that meant Felipe Anderson took over.
Yeah, and the guy joining those ranks in midfield is Pablo Fornals. He... put on quite the show at the under 21 championships with Spain. He's been kind of polarizing in terms of, obviously, the West Ham supporters are hot on him. I saw a lot of numbers that made it seem like, you know, maybe he's not as good as he's being hyped up. But after watching him play, I mean, he kind of strikes me as... He's very Lanzini-esque. The only difference being he can play in a deeper role, and I don't think he's as complete a player as Lanzini.
And here comes the point where we are on complete opposite spectrums of a player, because I think he's Denis Suarez 1.5.
Really? Have you watched highlights of him playing?
I have watched highlights. And it's not that he looks bad. It's just, one, the jump from the Spanish League to the physicality of the Premier League has not been something that most players are able to take well. There's the competition for spaces, because even if Arnautovic is sold, West Ham still has a whole army of wingers, and even though he can play centrally, like, where's he gonna play?
So the situation I had been thinking of was West Ham sell Arnie, then they don't get, like, an impact signing in terms of a forward.
Are you going false nine?
And then we get Mikel Antonio up front.
Oh, no. No, I don't want Antonio. I love Mikel Antonio so much in every position except a lone striker.
Well, I mean, they also have Yarmolenko coming back. He's going to be, supposedly he's on pace to be fully fit for the start of preseason. And, I mean, the one luxury they do have is Declan Rice is an absolute stud. So you can afford to field a more attack-minded midfield, especially with Balbuena and Diop. I mean, they looked great when they were fit together. So I do think that defense is going to improve, and that's going to allow them to kind of just go all out in terms of how they're setting up that midfield.
And shocker, West Ham comes into the preseason as our most intriguing team. Yet again.
Yeah, they are just...
annoying.
Because it's just there's so much promise. And every year I'm like, don't hype them up this much. And then I'm like, well, if this happens or this happens, lots of left to be desired from the Hammers. We're going to move on to your club, Spurs. And I guess I'll kind of just hand it over to you on their signings.
The impact signing was they signed Jack Clark, a young winger from Leeds United, and then loaned it back to Leeds United. Just kidding. Spurs were finally able to get their guy. And Tanguy Ndombele.
Well, I mean, they finally got multiple people. They finally got someone.
Well, they technically signed three players, but they only signed one.
Yeah, what can we expect to see out of him?
So here's the interesting thing. Due to the fact that he's a defensive midfielder that's likely just going to blow everything up, I'm not touching him in draft leagues, really. I'm not touching him in FPL. And that's fine and good, because what he really does is raises the value of both Spurs defense and attack. Because last year, Dele Alli was more of a defensive midfielder, had more interceptions than in his entire career for Spurs, because Moussa Sissoko was the only guy playing sort of defensively in the midfield.
Yeah, so with how that changes, what's your stance on Dele at 8.5 in OFPL? Like, is this signing enough where you're fully confident in spending that much on him?
It is, because Dele can go back to what he's actually good at, which is making lateral runs into the box. I don't think this signing has a massive impact on Eriksen, but on Dele, Kane, and then I also transferred in Hugo Lloris, because this has a massive impact on the amount of shots that he'll face, meaning his likelihood of clean sheets will increase.
Yeah, I do think this is a step in the right direction for them.
Also, it means that one of Eric Dier or Victor Wanyama can be sold.
Who would you prefer they keep?
Eric Dier. Just due to the fact that he has a wider range of passing, can play and defensive midfield. And at this point, even though he wasn't a Spurs youth player, he's Spurs through and through.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of Dier, I think of him on Spurs.
Spurs and England.
Yeah. The other guy I guess we'll mention, Watford signed Craig Dawson, who people remember from his days at West Brom in the Premier League. This is an interesting signing because I have no idea who the fuck's going to play center back for Watford next season.
Well, I can start you off with the fact that he won't, but he will play a large role in helping the Watford center backs next year. Because just looking at the fact that Christian Cavaselli did not make the smartest decisions last year. Craig Cathcart is a walking injury.
Yeah, Sebastian Proto was also hurt last year.
I don't even know if Proto will start the season on the team or not. But just like looking at the fragility of Watford center backs, one, having Dawson in to be able to coach them, and then two, potentially stand in when needed, could be immense.
Yeah, they were extremely banged up last year at the back end. And he can also play on the right side of defense. So, you know, he'll kind of, I mean, I don't really see him getting too many minutes over Femina and Jan Mott. I guess, like you said, he's just going to kind of be a rotating piece there. It's a good, I mean, it's more of a signing.
It's a great depth signing.
Yeah. So I think that's a good move for them, just since they were so banged up last year.
I just hope he starts versus Spurs and magically decides to fall down at one point.
So I think we've gone over most of the signings that have gone over the line at time of recording. Let's wrap up today's episode of FPL 360 by talking about some of the rumors. And I guess we mentioned the Maguire saga earlier to Manchester United. What is the highest amount of money you think United should go in trying to get him away from Leicester? I guess going off that supposedly 70 million.
If that was 70 million straight up, which I doubt it was, I think United should be out on him.
Yeah, I mean, considering that it's just an insane amount of money.
You could get world-class center backs for less than that.
Yeah, I mean, I would like them to sign him. I think he'd be a good fit back there, but I just don't agree with...
I mean, literally just throw that 70 million at Spurs and you'll get Topi Alderweireld.
Yeah, it's fair. Arsenal are another team that have been in the news lately. Kieran Tierney is the left back from Celtic, who I personally like, and I think he's...
I don't want him to go to Arsenal because of the fact that, yeah, I want Saeed Kolasinac to be a dropping asset in draft leagues.
Yeah, I mean, they came in with a bid for 15 million and had it rejected.
Of course they did, because Arsenal keeps deciding we're going to lowball teams.
Yeah, I also just don't know. I think he'd be exposed. I just don't think Arsenal's defense is good enough where he could come in and be given enough time to develop over the season without being thrown to the Arsenal TV wolves.
I do think it'll be better this season with Rob Holding coming back, because as soon as Holding went down, that was when Arsenal's defense disintegrated.
Yeah, and sticking with them, do you think Zaha is going to go to Arsenal?
I don't think they're ever going to pay enough.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, it'd be a very interesting move. I just don't see them opening the checkbook.
The problem is, so if Zaha goes to Arsenal, I'm not a major fan of Zaha at Arsenal. I like him being the guy at Crystal Palace. And while, yes, Arsenal would theoretically be paying enough for him to be a starter, how many high-priced guys have we seen them buy and then end up rotating?
Yeah, I think he's just another piece in that, you know, in that attacking core. Especially when you consider that if they don't play with two forwards next season, unless we see Aubameyang out in the wing, that means that him or Lacazette will be getting left out on a week-to-week basis.
And sorry, but Lacazette's a lot more talented than Wilfried Zaha.
Yeah, well, that's my point being, is that if you can't figure out a way to get Aubameyang and Lacazette in for every match, I don't see how they would be willing to tweak their formation to incorporate Zaha. But then again, you never know with Emery. I just don't think they have the funds to get it done. And the last one I want to talk about, which we brought up with Southampton, is rumors of Charlie Austin to Sheffield. Now, Sheffield have a, I guess you would say, similar player to Glenn Murray in the fact that you have an old English striker who's was a very proficient scorer in the championship, and Billy Sharp. Do you think Austin heads to Sheffield?
I mean, Billy Sharp still needs help. Like, he was playing with Hogan last year, so I'm not too concerned if Austin does go to Sheffield. I mean, they 100% need more firepower because their defense is Premier League ready. The attack is not.
Yeah, my one concern is that I think Austin and Sharp have some similarities in terms of how they like to play. So I'm not too familiar with Sheffield's approach in terms of attacking wise, but you're giving up an awful lot of pace up front with Austin and Sharp together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to claim to be a Sheffield tactics expert because I'm not.
We also haven't put together those promoted club preview episodes yet.
But there's ways around working with not having pace. And if you can get the... Is Charlie Austin still good in the air, or do his legs not work anymore? We'll see next year. Yeah. Plus, Billy Sharp's accuracy, it may be able to work. Because it's not like Hogan's fleet of foot either.
Yeah. No, it's definitely interesting. I mean, I like Charlie Austin, so I'd like to see him.
You just wanted to stand up from really so you could draft him again.
Yeah, exactly. Like I do every year. He's replacing Andy Carroll now in terms of the guy I'm hyping the most. Carroll's a free agent. There's a couple other guys who are without contracts that we could potentially see in a new place this year. Danny Welbeck, Daniel Sturridge, Gary Cahill just left Chelsea. The name I want to mention, though, because he's someone who, you know, he didn't really live up to the hype when he came into the Premier League the first time, but Hatem Ben Arfa is without a contract. Could you see it? Any
nope,
teams
nope,
taking a chance nope on him? Not at all?
Yeah, I think that ship sailed in the Premier League, at least.
All right, well, that's going to do it for today's episode of FPL 360. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at FPL_360 and pretty much everywhere you can find podcasts.